This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy!
It is a Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry, and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Right on. Charles Adler, thank you so much for coming up tonight.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're broadcasting here from Virgin Hotel on a Sunday night, and it's a real chill night. It's kind of like there's no one here at the Commons Club. It's everything's very low key.
It's cool.
Yeah. So, all right.
And there's so much you and Tara were talking about earlier that I wanted to jump in on. It was all like good and meaty stuff. So
yeah, I mean, that's what I love about doing this is like getting like two or three kind of like, you know, creatives who might be disparate on paper.
Yeah.
Like your background is in all the things we're going to talk about, and Tara's and like journalism and all these things. But then you kind of get everybody in the room, and a lot of things are universal. A lot of like stories about like how to get started, like how to keep going, all these things. Like it doesn't really matter if you're a rapper, if you're a producer, if you're whatever. Totally. They're very universal.
Yep.
So, all right. I think there's some really cool things that we can talk about with you. I think there's the big thing that everybody knows about you, which is the Kickstarter thing. So we'll touch on that. I don't want to like have to dwell on it because you have a lot more current projects happening. But let's, again, start at the beginning. Like, how did your creative journey kind of start? Wherever you want to identify that as.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I commonly talk about is as a kid. So I grew up on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, somehow I stumbled into the idea of wanting to become an architect. And when it came time to decide on where to study architecture, it created quite a kind of fervent debate between my father and I. And I lost that debate. and I ended up going into engineering school, which was just a turn of many. But I guess, you know, I guess the start of it was architecture. But I think one thing that I'd play on with Tara's commentary about her own like work and life was poetry, oddly, mm-hmm. which may not be something that I've actually talked about too often. So I would commonly in high school sit in the library and read actually old white men, typically, right? Allen Ginsberg, Robert Frost, Kerouac was a big interest of mine, and I would argue like a lot of that time in the library led me into, I suppose maybe the transition would be like the poetry of architecture or the poetry of the built environment or the poetry of design.
Mm-hmm.
So architecture. How about that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because I think if somebody didn't know you, they would just see Kickstarter and they'd be like, oh, some Silicon Valley tech guy.
Right. Yeah.
No, and they wouldn't. No, I don't totally. Think they'd plug poetry and architecture into that narrative.
Yeah. I mean, for one, so when we founded Kickstarter, actually, a part of that story that isn't commonly known is we were totally spread out around the country,
mm-hmm.
But we were founded in New York, and the impetus behind the platform was New Orleans. So, like, culturally, very different from Palo Alto, Silicon Valley,
right?
Like excessively different.
I would say New Orleans is about as different from Palo Alto
close,
as you can get.
Pretty close, yeah. And we weren't the sort of traditional kind of Silicon Valley kind of story, if you
right.
will, but yeah.
So, you know, you had an enormous role in the activation and development of Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a part of your story. The work that you're doing now, and we can touch on Kickstarter if you want, but the work you're doing now is around Lost Arts, which
yep.
is a makerspace in Chicago. It's in Goose Island, and that activated in 2015 as a pop-up and then in 2016 in its current incarnation, right?
Yeah. So you know, I tend to look at everything that we do as a bit of an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So Kickstarter was a social experiment. Twitter, all these things that we play with now that we talk a lot about are effectively social experiments. It's the idea that somebody had come up with while being confronted with a wall, some mm-hmm. barrier. And so with Lost Arts, it was kind of accepting a lot of that. And very explicitly, going back to the kind of your comment about the 2015 versus 2016 piece, 2015 was a 1-month pop-up.
right?
Intended to kind of play with and get a better understanding of the cultural need for a multidisciplinary, multicultural space, right? You use the term makerspace. I think that's kind of part of it. But I'm actually looking for something much broader than that. It's sort of taking the best parts of that maker culture, maker space, taking a lot of what I would say is kind of oriented towards more of like a social space or civic space, as well as this kind of technology space. And so that was this 1 month, a little very exhausting, emotionally draining, but really fervent moment. And about a year and a half later, opened up the 2016 version. And that was also supposed to be temporary. It was, that was supposed to be 6 months. And really the intention behind that version was to understand, would anybody pay for this thing, right? And then how do you run this thing?
Right.
So in a month, you're not really going to get a sense of, like, how do you operate this thing as a business per se. I just wanted to get a sense of, do people show up? Like, was my thesis, was my idea, was this thing that I was kind of hunting for interesting to others? And that was a closed network, so I'd only invited, say, 60 people from different disciplines from around the city, musicians and painters and engineers and designers and so entrepreneurs and so forth. And so 2016, we were supposed to end literally on the 31st of December. And by virtue of it going as well as it has, we decided to keep it open and keep kind of playing with the experiment and playing further with what this thing could be. Yeah.
So, okay. So, I mean, that's really interesting. We'll pick apart a couple things there. Do you remember your mindset kind of like at the end of that first month in 15, and then even like at the end of the year in 2016, like both times where you were either bringing it to a close or you thought you were going to be bringing it to a close? Like,
yeah.
What was your evaluation mindset at those points?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word evaluation because I tend not to be an overly analytical dude, but
okay.
Maybe more on the emotional side. So end of 2015, I very distinctly remember sitting in this empty Bow Truss, 4,000 square foot Bow Truss at Morgan and Hubbard. No longer exists, got torn down, which is the whole reason why I was able to get in there in the first place. And literally I just sat in there by myself, kind of taking in that moment, and cried for most of the day. It was an intense month.
Yeah.
And I didn't really, after that day, we packed up, we moved the stuff into a friend's office or storage facility. And honestly, like, I went on vacation with my family after that, took a break. And, you know, I think going into towards the end of, I would say 2016, after we'd reopened in August, the thought was more of a rolling. It wasn't kind of this explicit day, because we were doing really well. We had built up this momentum, word of mouth. We very explicitly didn't want to market the space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like we were trying to keep it underground, but I wanted to understand the sort of true value of what we were doing, right? To see us, there's something bigger here, and so I wouldn't say there was an explicit moment, and I quite frankly, with the insanity of running another startup or creative project, haven't really had a moment to sit and pause, to be completely honest with you. And so I don't know what that reflection would be.
No, but I mean, I think that's interesting. And it's like, obviously it did work well enough in 2015 to keep it going. And then it worked well enough to, you know, continue past that December 31st date. So now we're the beginning of April 2017. And yeah. Is it just now kind of an open-ended thing where you're going to see where it takes you, or?
No, I mean, there's always been a very explicit goal with this whole thing. So, I mean, maybe I'll pull you back to the genesis of this recent project. Actually has origins in Chicago, so maybe similar to Tara's story earlier. I tend to, maybe this is a word that she wants to take on, is the term flaneur. So realize that I'm a bit of this definition, which is to say, travel a lot. Travel is a a very critical part of my being. Mm-hmm. And flaneur is somebody who basically traverses a city and is just looking and observing, right? And so I guess I do that in a number of different cities. And so the moment in that sort of genesis period where I kind of stumbled across my wall that led to this experiment was about 15 years ago. It was back in 2001. And I wanted to build a piece of furniture, which, if you're curious why, I have no business building furniture because my whole background, 25 years or so, has been design and programming on the internet, playing with technology and design. But I wanted to build this piece of furniture. And I had no skill, no network, and no tools. And quite frankly, no space. It was a small apartment in Chicago.
So all just minor details.
Yeah, minor details. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is this guy going to do? And so still determined to make this thing, I used my father-in-law's tools in the suburbs and made a complete disaster out of this piece of beautiful veneered plywood. And to this day, that thing has never been built, but it was that little moment that I kind of carried with me over the past 15 years. And when it was time to leave Kickstarter, thinking about WTF, like what the heck am I going to do afterwards? And this idea kind of kept resident. And the issue that I recognized in 2013 to 2015, effectively, that I was dealing with in 2001 was, like I said, lack of space, but more so like this lack of network to other creatives that had this kind of visceral connection to the built world. Mm-hmm. Right? I've been building stuff and designing stuff on the internet, virtual world. And I would say also recognizing the fact that on the internet, we've democratized effectively, well, I won't say everything because mm-hmm. there's still plenty to do, but much.
Right.
And Kickstarter being sort of the capital component to that, I suppose. But the one of the components that kind of sat with me was this idea of the democratization of knowledge or bartership of knowledge, right? This sort of sharing of knowledge between one another. And there wasn't really something that fit into the program of academia, mm-hmm. right? And I suppose all of these things kind of together were part of that experiment in 2015 and then leading into this 2016 experiment. But the sort of end goal with this thing is I'm not generally just interested in solving a Chicago problem.
Right.
That was part of the intention with the 2015 thing, which was to see like, hey, is there something here? But with this kind of flaneur story, this idea over the last 3, 4, 5 years of my life traveling around the world and looking at other creative spaces, recognizing that there's still a gap, mm-hmm. right? You can argue maybe this is a business mindset, but I would argue more so for me personally is more of a cultural mindset. There was something missing, and I wanted to see if what was in my head was going to fill it. So that was 2015. And I would say that the process by which I'm going through 2015, 2016, now into 2017 is all in an effort to get to a point where we can actually roll this out, this concept out nationally, if we're lucky enough, internationally.
That'd be amazing. And so what...
I'll cross my fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I have observed, I mean, I visited the space once, but I'm aware of it, and I recognize the model.
You came out to one of our parties, which is a very different right. kind of thing, but yeah.
But it's clear, just from everything about it, that it's like this is a maker space, mm-hmm. you know, and everything that comes with it. And I think it's worth noting that it's different from a lot of the, you know, like, I don't have to tell you, incubators are very, like, in right now in Chicago.
Sure, yep.
Everywhere there are incubators,
yep.
right? And, like, and then there's the well-known ones, and then it kind of scales down from there. And there's co-working spaces, et cetera.
Totally.
And a lot of, and this is nothing against them, a lot of them kind of circle the same purpose and the same model. You know, you sit there with a laptop, you work, whether it's in a big open space with a bunch of people or you have a private room, but you're working with a laptop. That's the general beginning and end of it.
Yep.
And what's interesting about Lost Arts is, like, there's 3D printing. There's tools. There's, like, you can actually do things with your hand other than type.
Can include the typing thing.
But you can include the typing, but that's not, like, where it starts and ends.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess what I would say for me, I'm not going to kind of throw off the last 25 years or 30-some-odd years of my fascination with technology, but at the same time, you know, I think the thread for me my entire life has been just really fascinated with the creative act. I'd say I consider myself creative, not an artist, but I'm, like, deeply interested in that, the artistic act. I think my whole drive with Kickstarter in those dark moments when you don't know if this thing's actually going to become a thing, was spirited on by that kind of childhood fascination with creativity and that kind of artist drive.
Right.
Ensuring that creatives can get their voice out there. And so for me, I would say, like, the tools you mentioned, so we can run through the laundry list of them, from, like, we have a studio space, which I guess you would commonly describe as a co-working space. Mm-hmm. I like studio better. Expresses a little bit more of what we're intending. Prototyping lab, which is commonly seen either in a use for concepting creative works. And so I generally use creative work as a description of both, like, a design and technology facet as well as art. So we have 3D printers. We see artists using them as much as we see product designers using them. Mm-hmm. Right? We have a laser cutter. Same thing. We have a table saw in the back. Same thing. And so the sequence of spaces, I would say, is the culmination of what the intention is, which is different slightly than a makerspace, or different slightly than an incubator, or a residency, or a co-working space, or a social space. So sort of a lounge space, the studio space, prototyping lab, workshop, and then event space. And what I would say is the thing that draws that all together is that creativity and providing different facilities for that creative expression. Right, whether that be designing it or concepting it or communicating about it in the studio space to concepting it in that prototyping lab and building it in the workshop and then actually showcasing it in the event space.
Right.
Right. Like, it's that, I don't want to say it's explicit, but it's providing all those facilities for the creative individual.
Well, and something, you know, and you mentioned this, but, like, you are looking at, and you're, I think it's already happening, like, activating, like, workshops, classes, like, these kind of, like, live events where it's not just people coming in and working on their own, but it's, like, you're building that community dialogue there as well, right?
Yeah, totally. So we've done fashion workshops. We've done a few music workshops and music events. So beyond this, like, the party, we've done this thing, a collaborative with this group called On the Spot, or Modular On the Spot, which are basically a bunch of folks in the city that are really interested in modular synthesizers. And had a showcase for them, to sewing workshops, to 3D printing workshops. So basically, like, teaching kind of the fundamentals of these tools to make them more accessible. And then going to the other extent, which is, I would say, playing more in this sort of inspiration space. Mm-hmm. So on Friday, this past Friday, we hosted the opening of an exhibit, month-long exhibit that we're doing in collaboration with the Chicago Design Museum. Called Great Ideas, which we had some members participate in, and they had curated some community members in the design world to participate in. And then on Tuesday night, we've got a talk in collaboration with the Illinois Institute of Technology's ID program.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Which is really great guy. This guy, Robert Fabricant, who they're bringing in from New York to give a talk about design thinking in the sort of social entrepreneurial space. So I would say the core of it is more rooted in kind of the practice of design, which I would say is this bridge between art and commerce.
Nice. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were finished. That's why. So,
yeah, it's all right.
something you said in an interview last summer that really stuck out to me. It's from Chicago Inno. The article is called "Go Inside the Center for Lost Arts: Co-working for the Accidental Entrepreneur." Yeah. The article is quoted as saying, "Though Adler has been based in Chicago for several years, in the future he'd like to see Center for Lost Arts spread across the country, like you talked about."
Yeah.
He said, "Chicago, however, feels like the right place to start." And then it quotes you saying, "We're going through this beautiful renaissance where we're excited about creatives and creative work. Whether it's food, coffee, beer, furniture, graphic design, or startups, all that stuff is happening. The city is economically strong, but real estate-wise, fairly cheap. I can have the funding I want to have." And that stuck out to me because I really identify with that kind of idea where it's like Chicago is obviously going through this renaissance. Everyone knows that. But it's a lot cheaper to live and launch here than it is on the coast.
Totally.
So,
God, without a doubt.
Yeah. Talk about kind of like the value of being in Chicago, the advantages here, what that means to you, all these kind of things.
Yeah. So I should know that I dropped out of college. And when I dropped out of college, I moved up to Chicago, and that was in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And so this was like the, I don't know, depending on whoever's timeline, like middle or tail end of the rave scene.
Okay.
Right? And you know, like my roots, I would say, is in electronic music to punk rock and probably everything in between. And Chicago's got a deep history in all of that.
Well, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this renaissance that I mentioned in the article, I think is maybe fair, maybe unfair. I would say that what's happening now is that creative culture has this really interesting opportunity because there's notice to that creative culture.
Yeah.
Right? Like those communities, those various communities, right? And I think the opportunity is to own the potential of that creative act. Right, and so whether you're a musician, whether you're a designer, whether you're a painter or a sculptor, I think, and maybe even more so, I don't want to get too political, but maybe in the current climate that we're in, I think we're hungry for expression,
right?
With a point of view,
yeah, that means something,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely,
and so I think. It is that creative community that I would argue provides that, right? And there are all these mechanisms out there, say on the internet, built on technology that have effectively provided that, right? So you think about things as small as Square, right?
This
payment system, to Kickstarter, to Etsy, to even Instagram. Like I know tons of folks that have accidentally started a business through the sharing of like a very innocent photograph. And so I think Chicago kind of bears a lot of that as well, which is it's an excessively creative city.
Right.
Right. That, and this is my own personal view on the city, it's always been very underground. Right. And I think there's this moment right now where that sort of underground can kind of pop up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And own it themselves. And I think that's when I say renaissance in this Inno article, I think that's a lot of what I'm talking about, right? Which is effectively not necessarily as a creative leaning on somebody else to handle the economic potential of your creativity.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's such an exciting time, and I think you nailed it. It's like we are having a moment, and you're right, like there is that recognition that hasn't always existed. The culture, there's always been art and culture in Chicago.
Totally.
But it hasn't always been validated in the way that it is right now.
Yeah.
So Lost Arts, for the time being, at this moment in time, it's open. It's active.
Yeah.
Until further notice.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get involved, how can they do that? Or what would the kind of ideal artist, creator, et cetera, look like? Or not look like, but like, who would that be? Like, who is this best suited to?
Yeah. So so simply, like, it is a physical space, which for me is kind of trippy to talk about. So it's at 1001 North Branch.
Mm-hmm. Goose Island.
On Goose Island, yeah, which is like a little man-made island in the middle of the city, which is kind of rad. So you can swing by. You can go to the website, lostarts.co. and check it out. Shoot us an email, swing by. I guess in terms of that question about the ideal person, I think it's less so about a discipline and more so about an interest in being in a space with multiple disciplines, right? Like I described, we've got, so there's this one little stretch of wall that's a really good expression of this. On one end of it is a duo, Jack and Seth, who work on this project called Wabash Lights. Ironically, we're right down the street.
Right down the street, so, and that's a really cool, innovative project.
Totally amazing. So art, tech, civic project that's incubating out of the space. They're developing an app that allows you to engage with this stretch of lights that would run.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's totally amazing. So you've got them on one stretch of wall, and about 6 inches away is this woman, Pam, who's a painter. And then about 6 inches away from there is a stretch of 3D printers, which, you know, we've got, like I said, artists and product designers working on prototyping anything from glassware to footwear to facets of a product that's in the, what I would say, is urban organic agriculture. So a guy who's growing mushrooms and developing a kit to grow mushrooms. So it's this, like, super weird crew of people. And I would say, like, that's what I'm gunning for.
Yeah, and it sounds like the third line is just having a great idea and passion.
Yeah.
And a unique point of view.
Totally, yeah.
That's awesome. The website is lostarts.co. People can find there. Can they sign up for a membership there?
Yeah, you can sign up for a membership. You can hit us up. You can follow us on the Twitters and the Instagrams all and
things.
All that from the website. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I say this to everybody, and I always mean it. Like, the mic is on for you. Let's continue this conversation as new developments happen. I would definitely want to make it out to more events at Lost Arts. And, like, really, as things are developing with this, let us know, and we'll set up more conversation, man.
Cool, man.
I love it.
Yeah, thanks for having me out.
Charles Adler, thank you so much for coming up, man. Appreciate
it. Thanks.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at dynastypodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.